Paul Teller, Rabbi Menken, with us live. Rabbi Paul, thank you for meeting with us today. You know, my first question is, I don't know what's on the rundown. I don't care. Here's my first question. When are we getting? Let's start with
Paul. I love it,
Paul.
No, keep going.
I want to get a condo on the beach in Gaza. What's the timeline?
I knew it. I knew that's what you're going to say.
I want the penthouse.
Absolutely.
I want the one up. You know that. I want beach. I heard the beach is nice. I want to go to Gaza and I want to go on the beach. I want a condo. What's the deal with that?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing too, right? I mean, like, obviously we think of Gaza as this pit, which of course it is now. But if everyone just looks at a map, right? I mean, it's got a nice Mediterranean coastline. So, I mean, it must be beautiful if they can actually fix it up. Like you said, condos, resorts, restaurants, boardwalk. I mean, it actually has the potential to be quite the tourist destination, but it's got to be under Israeli control, as you know. So we'll see.
President Trump, Rabbi, says... Go ahead, Rabbi.
John, it's not as if, first of all, thank you again for having us each weekend. As far as this goes, you look at the, in fact, Hamas had promotional videos, a year or two ago about how wonderful Gaza looked because, yes, it's got gorgeous beaches. It's got a Mediterranean vibe. They had five-star hotels. The problem is that they were building terror tunnels underneath them. So there goes that. But there's no question that this could be a delightful resort. And I'm waiting for the first couple of synagogues to open up on the Gaza Strip. And, you know, Chabad will probably be first. You know how that works. So, but there's a lot to follow because this really could be a place where civilized people go to vacation.
Paul, President Trump said something that I agree with 100%. He said, whatever happens there, Hamas has got to get wiped out and they can't be any kind of a governing entity. I mean, so he's determined to just get him out of there. How realistic is that? Paul.
Okay. I'll be honest with you. I'm sure we'll dive into this, but like seeing those hostages, not only in the condition they were in, I know we'll get into that, but just that they were able to, Hamas was able to stage this incredible performance as part of the release of the hostages. And there's just so many of them, so many Hamas terrorists just right there. And I'm thinking, why are these guys alive still? How is this possible? And I'm not trying to blame anybody, but it just, I don't know. I just had a jaw dropping moment of how very much intact Hamas still is, despite all the efforts of Israel and allies over the last, year and a half or so. So there's obviously more work to be done because they're not near surrender. Apparently they're not near, incapacity because they still have 80 something hostages. So I don't know. I'm a little nervous about that. And hopefully Rabbi has a better, a more upbeat answer, but right now they still seem to be, alive and well.
Rabbi Menken.
At a certain point, the Americans and everybody in the West have to realize the barbaric cruelty of what we call humanitarian aid. This is such a stupid policy, uniquely applied to Israel. There's never a conflict anywhere else in the world. Who is telling the Ukrainians, you have to make sure that you provide food and fuel to the Russians whose villages you are capturing? That doesn't work that way. I mean, we have an entire nest of Hamas supporters over there, and all the food and fuel got stolen by Hamas. These hostages were held for an additional year because the Biden administration required the Israelis to give Hamas fuel. It really worked that way. And so if we want to actually clean out the strip, if we want to actually make sure that all the Hamas people are gone, you're going to have to stop providing humanitarian aid. It's going to have to be, if you want to live, get out. Because that's the only way to do it.
Paul, agree with Rabbi here, as cold as that may seem. You keep giving them aid, they're going to stay. But it was interesting, the point you brought up, you crystallized it in my mind, because I remember watching that, and of course, the focus was on the hostages, but I remember saying the same thing, like, boy, there's a lot of Hamas army type people there, like military types.
Right.
I mean, it didn't look like they were on their last legs.
When
you see an occasional picture of the Ukrainian army occasionally, because you can't get anything out of it.
Yeah.
But they don't look like they're going to win. I mean, they look ragged and dispersed. And boy, you looked at them and they were well fed. You know, they didn't look haggard. Their uniforms were crisp.
Yep.
And there was a lot of them. And I'm thinking to myself, where's the wipeout?
Yeah. Right. And again, I know some of that was a show, right? That maybe they picked their best ones that are still around, gathered them all in one place. So, you know, but still, the fact that there were even enough of those to gather. And like you said, they look well fed. They look crisp. They were clearly strong. Or the body language, they were strong. They were in control. This wasn't like, oh my God, please don't hurt me. Please take the hostages. I hope you're okay with that, right? That wasn't the body language. The body language was like, we're giving you these three, but just understand we got dozens more. And we're going to need a lot more from you if you want anything else. Like that was, you know, with shoulders back, chest out kind of body language. And it was, you know, very, very, very upsetting. So more work to do.
Rabbi?
Just totally agree with what Paul just said. I mean, the truth of the matter is it doesn't take a whole lot to put on a show. But they absolutely, you know, they did their best. But the thing to realize is that Hamas has always been operating under the cameras. Notice for the last 6 months, Hamas and their allies in the West have been claiming that there's a famine developing in Gaza. Notice that everybody there, except the three hostages, were extremely well fed. The three hostages were deliberately tortured, including by withholding food. I mean, these are disgusting, barbarian animals. And again, I mean, the fact that we're feeding them is just imbecility on the world's part. But notice you've been lied to openly. That's what you see when they stand up there looking so proud and cool and well-fed and pressed uniforms and all of that. These are people who have been lying to you, and we're just going to go ahead and swallow more.
Paul, what did you think of Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to the White House with President Trump? He was there a day and a half.
Yeah. Just fantastic, right? I mean, and again, frankly, going back, sticking on our theme of body language, great body language, right? He didn't have to say a word, and you could tell Netanyahu was comfortable, happy to be here, knew that America stands with Israel again, knew that Trump personally stands with Netanyahu, with Israel, with Jewish people, with Israeli people, is going to, you know, be upset when things are done unjustly to Israel. Like, I don't know if you saw comments from President, I think it was on Air Force One yesterday, talking about the conditions of the hostages and how that can't be allowed. This can't happen again. Things along those lines. So, I mean, for that reason alone, it was a great visit. But, you know, from what we understand, there just were a lot of great conversations, and a lot of this, you know, hasn't necessarily been public, but great conversations about moving forward on Abraham Accords, Saudi normalization, you know, again, moving people out of Gaza, as Rabbi was saying, and getting them back to Jordan, getting them to Egypt, you know, and clearing out Gaza of Hamas. But more work to do, but it sounded like it was a great meeting, great conversations, great reconnections.
Rabbi, any reaction to that visit?
I would say that, you know, Netanyahu went there with a wish list, and not only did he get his whole wish list, he got some extras thrown in too. I mean, the clarity of Trump on these issues at the – actually, it was a friend of mine who commented that – to hear Donald Trump saying, I don't know much how much longer we can put up with this, the idea that these people were being starved, the idea that these people were being tortured, the idea that we should put up with that. And the friend said, like it is so, we have gotten so used to double talk from so-called Western leaders that to hear Trump actually express moral clarity is somehow surprising to us. Like, this was the most basic thing in the world. If you're starving hostages, we don't have any tolerance for you. We're going to have to kill you out. You're done. You're gone. Yeah. This is it. If you are looking, by the way, at these pictures and you still have a question, maybe Israel's doing something wrong, maybe there's two sides here, maybe you have to think about the Palestinian side, you are a barbarian. You are part of the problem. You are supporting the Nazis. Grow up. Get a life, get a moral conscience, then come back and talk to us. Because listen to Trump. He's the first Western leader that we've heard in about 12 months talk with moral clarity about what's going on over there.
Amen. And by the way, also we should point out to your listeners that, like, as great as it is that those three hostages were released, of course, and you know all the health problems they're gonna face and things like that. I think if I'm getting my numbers right, two out of the three didn't even know that they were coming back to killed family members. Like, in other words, two of the three, I think their wives were killed. One of them had a child killed on October 7th, all of that. So, like, you know, you think this great joy, I'm free. And then, then you have to also, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and you don't have your wife or family with you in the home anymore. I mean, it's just, so the torture is ongoing, even though they're released out of their immediate tunnel, Hamas torture. But, you know, that the rest of their lives, they're going to have that torture ongoing. So we should honor that.
I want to get you guys' reaction to a new book is coming out in March by one of the writers for Politico covering the White House, covering President Trump, now with Axios. And this is about the Iranian threat of assassinating President Trump during the campaign. And it was pretty detailed. I forget the author eludes me now, but now it's with Axios. But he had said that the threats were so concerning to the president's security that one time they utilized his plane as a decoy. He was on his second plane. They've done that, they said, a number of times with the motorcade. And intel told the president and his staff that they believed that Iranian operatives were inside America and that they had access to surface-to-air missiles, which obviously could take out the Trump airplane at the time. It can't take out the Air Force One, obviously, because they have a defense system. But Trump 47 or whatever they called it did not have that. What was your reaction to that, guys?
I mean, this is, first of all, when you tell us it's a reporter from Axios and Politico, we're not excited, you know? These are not the guys who are usually speaking with a moral compass and having it straight. And yet, it was just a fact of the matter, it's cold reality. Of course there are Iranian operatives in the country. If there weren't 4 years ago, they certainly got in over the last 4 years. There's no question that, because we had a border that was just open and letting them in. And they could wade across like anybody else. So, how they would get a hold of advanced weaponry at that level, that's a different story. But obviously, such things can happen. Military stuff goes missing, quote unquote. And so it's obviously possible. And, you know, I think that you've got to listen to stuff like that. It's completely realistic. The Iranians would very much like to remove Trump from the scene because, again, it's that moral clarity problem. Everybody, you know, when he opens his mouth and something like that, the vast majority of Americans are listening to him and saying, oh, yeah, he's right about that. We cannot tolerate people who starve their hostages. No, we cannot deal with that. We're going to have to get rid of them. Well, you got to get rid of a guy who speaks with that kind of clarity.
Cool. Yeah, and great point on the culpability of the previous administration, Biden-Harris, right? I mean, like, hopefully there'll be some further investigation and we'll learn more, or maybe this book will have it, as to how these Iranian, you know, operatives actually got here. It could be just, you know, taking a nice flight to Mexico City and coming up across the border, or even to Quebec and coming across the northern border. But honestly, like, Biden and Harris were so friendly, openly friendly to the Iranians, it wouldn't shock me if they just kind of gave these people visas too and just said, come on in. You got some business to do at a university or something? Absolutely. Here's a visa. You know, no problem. So hopefully we'll learn more soon.
I want to thank you both, Rabbi Yakov Menken, Executive Vice President, Coalition for Jewish Values, and of course, my good friend Paul Teller, Executive Director, AAF. Guys, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Check them out, follow them on social media. You have been on the John Fredericks Media Network. We are live in Fairmont, West Virginia today.